Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Hey, welcome back to the Mining Pod. On today's show, we're joined by John Belzer of Soluna Digital Holdings. It's a great conversation talking a lot about infrastructure, whether that be for Bitcoin mining or AI. Thank you to Soluna for making this show possible. We got into a lot of great detail on even how to work out contracts, how to think about site selection, and even more. So thank you again to John and Soluna. I'd also like to thank our show sponsor on the CoinDesk Podcast Network, CleanSpark, America's Bitcoin miner. You'll hear more from CleanSpark a little bit later in today's episode. Okay, before we jump into the show, if you are in the Rocky Mountain region on April 20th, you should come down to the Independence Institute. We're throwing a Bitcoin halving party along with the Denver BitDevs. We'll have conversations with Bitcoiners. We'll do some live recordings. We'll even have some food and brews. So come on down to the Independence Institute on April 20th. Okay, on to the show. Hey, welcome back to the Mining Pod. Today we are joined by Soluna Holdings. John, welcome to the show. Thanks for making the time today. We've actually been talking about this conversation for, I think, the better part of a year now. So it's about time we got you on the podcast.
Yeah, you guys must be busy. You know, I missed a slot. It took me a year to get back on the train here. So I appreciate you getting me on the show, and I'm happy to be here.
Definitely. And it's good timing. The halving's here. So I think we have a lot of people who are tuning into Bitcoin mining. I mean, I got a text from a friend the other day who's like, "Oh, Bitcoin's having like a stock split coming up. Like, what's going on?" So I think we got a lot of people who are like paying attention. So it's good timing. Yeah, I'll hand it up to you to kind of get like the classic bio and stuff before we jump into profiling Soluna.
Sure. I'm John Belizaire, CEO of Soluna Holdings, public company, NASDAQ, SLNH. My background is really a longtime software entrepreneur. I started my career at Intel, helping to make chips for the PC. And in the ensuing 20 plus years from there, I have been an entrepreneur, really building enterprise software companies focused on the confluence between big technology waves and legacy industries. So when I started my first company, it was in the e-commerce space. We were helping banks, big banks in New York, bring their banking systems online. And my most recent company before Soluna, I was helping the insurance space take advantage of big data and make decisions faster and in a more repeatable way. So it's always been sort of, you know, big technology waves and legacy industries. Soluna is very, very similar. It's not software, although we have lots of software that make what we do work really well. It's an infrastructure company. We're building green data centers that help to stabilize the grid and make the grid more green. And I'm really excited about this company because it can have incredible sea change opportunities and changes there. But it is fitting the pattern. You know, it's you know, Bitcoin, blockchain, computing, next generation data centers slamming into the energy business. You know, I've spent the last 5 years learning everything there is about the energy business and structured finance and project finance, the grid dynamic pricing, all of that kind of stuff. And it's been fascinating. And now we're trying to sort of evolve that and revolutionize the way computing interacts with energy. It's a pretty cool company they'll be running, and it's a great team. So thanks for the introduction.
Yeah, just as an aside before we dive into Soluna, what's the thing that still makes you interested in this space? Because I think the energy part for me has been something that like I've learned so much more about over the last 2 to 3 years. And some of the people who even listen to the show, you know, reaching out and speaking with them, they're energy providers, they are harnessing gigawatts of power. And that's something I just like didn't think about like growing up or in normal life. So what's the thing that kind of scratches your curiosity, that itch?
You know, in my previous company, what fascinated me the most was how ubiquitous insurance was in the world. Pretty much nothing can work or operate without insurance. And energy is very much the same. You can't grow an economy. You can't really shape an environment without energy. You can't advance really important technology. Look at EVs and electric vehicles. I finally, got one this past year, and it's been fascinating to see the relationship between mobility and power anymore. And with the growth of AI, people are awakening to the role that data centers have in relation to power. So for me, it's really about the important dynamics that the power markets play in our economy and society, and how woefully underinvested in technology and technological advancements that other industries have benefited from, that the power space has not, you know? And so there's just a tremendous amount of innovation yet ahead for the energy grid. And that represents a lot of opportunity for companies like Soluna and, you know, bright minds who want to do something important for the world.
Definitely. Okay, let's jump into Soluna now. Give us a profile on it. And I have a bunch of specific questions, so we'll probably peel back through them. But yeah, I'll give you a second to kind of give like the 30-second pitch for everyone on Soluna who's not familiar, and then we'll go through all the specifics.
Soluna's more than just a miner. We see ourselves as a next generation digital infrastructure company that helps the grid to become greener. Our company mission is actually to help the world make green energy a superpower and a global superpower. We think this problem is a global issue, using computing as a catalyst. And that's all forms of computing. So Bitcoin mining is at the heart of that. AI is in our future here, and that's going to be a big part of it. But computing is a very powerful resource that can be used to solve a lot of problems that the grid is experiencing now that it's fast moving around the transition to green energy. The passing of the IRA last year essentially drove an incredible investment in the space, and that's exacerbating a really big problem, and that is that most green electrons that get produced by these big wind, solar, and hydro plants never actually make it to the grid. They get trapped in curtailment, and the energy just gets wasted. We have a power plant that we're connected to. About 50% of its energy gets wasted on an annualized basis. That's staggering. And that means that the grid is not able to absorb a lot of these power plants. So what do? We build these data centers. They're modular in design. They're designed to be, as carbon green as possible, if you will, low carbon as possible. Most of the electrons, about 80% of the electrons that power our data centers, come from the green power plants that we're connected to. And because we're in these rural places, most of the power that comes from the grid is also green because we're located in the area where all of the green power plants are. So that makes our data centers about 18% cleaner than most other data centers. Our facilities can wake up quickly based on demand, scale to any size that we determine, and scale down to any size that we determine. We can turn on and off different parts of the facility to optimize our source of energy. And the goal is to basically design a facility that can be up at least 95% of the time on average annually. Our current design is air-cooled, so more of the power is available for computing. We have a PUE, if you will, essentially right around sort of the 1.01 range, if not lower in many respects. We only need limited bandwidth to perform our functions. We cost about 1/10 of mainstream data centers. And from build to, energization usually takes us about 6 months for the first phase of any facility that we're building. And they're very compact, so we can put about 25 megawatts on a 3-acre parcel, et cetera. So these are all sort of key metrics to think about. But what that all means is we are a company that is helping to innovate the data center space and build a new type of data center that can live in a new type of place and brings data centers closer to the source of power generation. And that has some very important and compelling value propositions for the AI space. AI is incredibly power dense relative to other compute. It lives in traditional data centers that are now connected to green power. It uses a lot of power, and that power growth is anecdotally scheduled to exceed the entire data center space combined with just this segment. So that has very stark implications for the power markets, and what we're doing is a great solution to that problem. So we have a new facility we announced called Helix that's going to be focused on that space. So that's Soluna. We're an infrastructure company, very highly related to power.
I want to go back and talk about the cost per load. So I don't know if you guys publicly disclose your cost per megawatt build out, but one thing I've been talking about with some other builders out there is the cost per megawatt for Bitcoin mining is pretty low, I think, compared to the AI space. And if you want to go bid on AI infrastructure, the cost per megawatt is like crazy expensive. And we just saw an Amazon deal this week with Talon. I think it was like a $650 million purchase for some nuclear megawatts out in Pennsylvania. And I don't know, yeah. I don't have those numbers in front of me, but like significantly more expensive than going and building a Bitcoin mine out in West Texas.
Right.
How do you guys think about like the difference in the pricing here? And then what does that mean on the product side? Are you guys able to like put AI compute into these places, even though it's like maybe not as robust of infrastructure?
Yeah. So a couple of things. Number one, if you boil our model down, what we're essentially doing is creating a site and a software infrastructure and control systems, et cetera, to highly integrate computing and computing behavior to the power resources so that we can optimize power price and also optimize solving the issue for the power plant. We built Bitcoin first because it's a relatively easier solution to build out, and we can optimize for that type of compute, etc. We also built our facilities a bit more robustly also to begin testing different dynamics that would be needed for the future compute. We've been sort of preparing for high performance compute for some time now. The AI explosion is catalyzing the acceleration of our phase two plan. So we have been building all of the building block elements that are needed to place high performance computing in these West Texas or remote areas. In phase two, what we're going to do is take our existing design and upgrade it to a design we call Helix. And it's named after the Helix Nebula, I guess, otherwise known as Eye of Sauron. Helix is really about building a new type of facility that is specifically designed for AI. We are going to design it so that it's a closed system. So it's a sealed building. It has specialized liquid cooling technology in there, where we'd be directly cooling the chips. It will have, it'll be designed to be a zero water facility, meaning we will inject special water into the building that will be in a closed loop to cool, you know, these GPUs and AI facilities and these specialized racks. And then we'll have a cooling system that is not evaporative. It will be more compression-based. So think of your air conditioner will use essentially compression, which requires lots of power, which we have lots of, to cool the facility down. And the facility will have, you know, typical infrastructure that you would need for this type of compute. But we're sort of stopping at a level where we're not going to build super redundant facilities and things like that. We believe that you can deploy this compute in an environment where there's less of the CapEx that you would need for a traditional facility like the Talon facility. So we're building a specific new design. In fact, we're working with the engineering firms that build some of the hyperscale facilities out there to help us with this innovative approach. And the whole idea is to mechanically cool AI computing, place it in remote facilities, and integrate it with renewable energy, and have the site behave in this fluid and flexible way, in this fluid and flexible way, similar to how we're doing with Bitcoin, but we're optimizing it for the different workflow portions of AI. AI has three phases: training, tuning, and inferencing. We'll be optimizing our facilities for that training and tuning area, which is resilient to power loss, and we'll have all the full software stack to checkpoint data, store data. And then we're going to upgrade the interconnection or connectivity infrastructure in that area, which bodes well for rural parts of the country. As the Soluna model begins to take hold, more and more of the United States that otherwise did not have this level of infrastructure would now have significant improvements to the infrastructure that's going to bring, you know, growth in economy, growth in business in the area, et cetera. So that's how we see this space, Will. It's an evolution of our business, not a revolution of our business.
In the competitive world of Bitcoin mining, one name stands out: CleanSpark, America's Bitcoin miner. At CleanSpark, efficiency isn't just a goal, it's our standard. Our sophisticated facilities are built and led by expert teams who care about Bitcoin and the communities we work in. Scale? We've mastered it. Our large-scale operations have set us apart in the industry as examples of community-oriented building. Our track record speaks for itself. We navigate the complexities of the new economy with precision and with skill, continuously achieving operational milestones. Curious about how we do it? We invite you to discover the story behind CleanSpark's success at cleanspark.com.
So interesting that this is being brought up, because I had a conversation literally last night about this, how we have like these hyperscalers who are huge, and they've taken over from the world of yesterday, where we had a lot of businesses run their own server rooms within their business, right? And then everyone would move to the cloud, and they're like, you know, why would I want to run this server and have 20 employees doing this? I can just boot it over to Amazon or Google and they'll do it. And now these guys are making these huge, huge data centers. I mean, they're popping up all over. Like, I see them here in Colorado. I went down to Oklahoma for Bitcoin mining, and there's a huge Google facility down in Tulsa. They're all over the country. So you have like that, maybe like that 80% of the market that are like these huge guys. And then like the 20% is like more scrappy, smaller teams that like they don't have the CapEx, but they do have the ability and the know-how and the knowledge to like build out the other 20% of the market. I'd be curious, just from your perspective, what does the economics look like for this? What does it look like for like the people who are, no, you're not Google or Amazon, but you're still competing in the same product line. You guys have a different edge. What does the economics look like for you guys?
Yeah, so we haven't put out the full business strategy for this part of the business, so I don't want to get ahead of myself. But I think to answer your question, it's significantly more profitable than our current business, even with the macroeconomic competitive nature of the business. And it also works out that we are well positioned because the economics has really moved to power now. See, it used to be connectivity, location, space, because you have to build these big sprawling facilities. Now the real focus, and that's what drove that Talon deal, it's like, we need lots of power. We need 50 megawatt facilities, 100 megawatt facilities at a time. And so the advantage for us is we will have a very strong footing from our power cost basis. We have lots of scale. We have over 2 gigawatts of pipeline. So we don't need to go looking around the country. We have a series of locations already identified where we can build out this capability. And the way we're building the facilities will mean that our true CapEx investment will be lower than the traditional hyperscalers, and we'll be able to deliver the same level of service, if not better and cheaper, to young and growing companies that want to do AI, and also large enterprises that have work groups that are trying to get their arm around this AI space and don't want to, bet the farm on training, et cetera. They'd like to sort of, test their footing in this area. And so they're going to go to specialized facilities that just do this, that can offer them some economic advantages, that can give them, access to private equipment that's just for them, that they can deploy their data and support the training there, because as enterprise AI gets into the space and awakens, they're going to want to have proprietary capabilities to deploy. So we are going to be positioning ourselves in that sort of slice of the market, if you will. The key to success with entrepreneurship is always to be the biggest fish in the smallest pond. So our strategy is to go after some very clear niches for companies that care about the ESG and sustainability of their compute, want to start small but grow over time. And as a result, we believe that can have a material advantage to them. And as we build out this business, it would have a material effect on our profitability as a business and significantly diversify our revenues over time.
Love it. Yeah, this is a conversation we've had on the podcast a few times, but I'm picking it up more because I think last year there was a lot of AI chatter because obviously that was the hot topic. But Bitcoin miners were kind of putting into their press releases, and there was a few leftover GPUs, but it wasn't really fleshed out. It does seem like there's been enough time. We're kind of seeing those who are figuring it out and those who are going for pure play Bitcoin mining, which pivot into for a few minutes here and just talk about the Bitcoin mining side of things. And then we'll get into a few other points from there. What sort of info do you have about your fleet on hand? How do you guys select ASICs? Do you guys have a strategy here? Is it self-hosting? Is it self-mining? How do you guys go around this?
Yeah. The business transitioned earlier last year, the spring of last year, when I took over the helm. We started our transition away from primarily proprietary mining to primarily hosting. So we have 75 megawatts under management, another 133 that are close here. We'll be adding another 50 with Dorothy 2 once we get past some approvals. And what that says is that we're essentially 2/3 hosting now and about 1/3 mining. Mining happens in our Dorothy facility in Texas. About 25 megawatts of that is proprietary mining in that 50 megawatt facility. And then we have 25 megawatts in our Sophie project. That is a hosting environment, but we do profit share, so we expose ourselves to some prop mining revenues. So our fleet is mixed because we have customers in there and we have some of our own equipment, etc. And we consciously structure our agreements to ensure that our partners put in fairly new equipment or fairly efficient equipment. Right now, we have equipment in there that on average is about, I'd say, 30 joules per terahash or less. We try to sort of keep it around that range. And then we try not to sign long contracts with customers so that as the market changes and new equipment is out there, we can either ask them to upgrade that machinery or we bring in customers with, you know, X21s or whatever the next rev of highly efficient miners are.
How do you guys think about structuring these deals? The JV model is interesting. I get a lot of emails from listeners about this question, surprisingly, where they're like, hey, I want to set up a contract. I don't quite have the cash on hand, but I can partner with these people. Like, what's a good way of incentive alignment here? The thing I've seen mostly is just doing revenue share because you're both exposed to like the downside and the upside together.
Right.
But of course, it can get a little tricky when one side has like majority and has the operational, oversight. So how do you guys think about it? And when you're looking at all these deal structures?
Yeah, we've done and experienced a number of different deal structures. Our preferred fall into two categories. Number one, we're an infrastructure company, so we build out facilities. So to the extent that we have an investor that's interested in proprietary mining, but also owning infrastructure, then they would invest their own capital along with ours, side by side with ours, to build out a facility. And then we basically share the profits of the mining, the proprietary mining, our pro rata share straight up. So the Navitas joint venture that we have at Dorothy 1B, for example, is a straight up partnership. They own 49%. We own 51% of the site, and we share mining profits along that pro rata, you know, straight up. Whatever's up, we share. Whatever's down, we share our pro rata share of that. The other deal that we like is in our Sophie facility, where we have very advantageous power prices. Sophie is a partially curtailed facility, so we have a specific power structure that we have with the power company in Kentucky there. So there, what we like is a hosting agreement where there's some, pass through of the power. There's a fixed fee for services and sort of covering our fixed cost, if you will. And then there's some profit share above that. And that works out really well because, you know, customers can bring perhaps their, you know, lesser efficient miners, or they might have some miners in storage. We've had folks that sort of say, I have like thousands of machines. I don't know where to plug them in. This is a perfect site for that. And we do a deal with them. They deploy their machines. And what we do is we optimize the mix of the customers there to ensure the most profitable experience for that site to monetize our infrastructure. Those are the two that we like the most. I would say to folks out there, really think about who you want to partner with. Align your interests, right? So when one partner is experiencing pain, you're both experiencing pain. When both one partner is doing well, you're both doing well. So there's interest alignment there, and try to structure it such that it's a long-term partnership where you can grow together as you have more opportunities.
Definitely, I think I totally agree with that, and that's the stuff I've mostly told people is do a revenue share of some sort, and then try to figure out how to get both teams have access to a site, even if one team is mostly managing it. There's just so many stories out there, though, of like JV deals where one party is like minority and then they don't have access to the site. And then over time, things fall apart. So going to halving, how do you think any of these deal structures would change? Not necessarily for yourself, but industry-wide. Are you expecting anything to change? Some background for that question is I've spoken with a few different hosting providers out there, and they've said that like, most of the market going to halving has moved almost exclusively to JVs with rev shares as opposed to the hosting model because hosting,
yeah, makes sense.
You don't know what if their equipment's going to be like quite up to shape, and that they after April they're just like, oh, we can't mine here profitably anymore, we're just going to dump all these ASICs on you.
Yeah. So we have provisions in our agreements to sort of deal with those abandonment type of behaviors. You know, our power costs are so low. Like if it's really challenging for them based on their costs or their cost of capital to mine, then, you know, we would be happy to to continue to mine to cover our costs and so forth and monetize the infrastructure. I don't see changes to the agreement. I do agree that profit share is the way to go. This halving will be an interesting one. I was just talking to someone yesterday about what's so different this time. And it's kind of tongue in cheek to say this time it will be different because everything seems to be fairly similar in the space, but it is different. Number one, we've never had interest rates at these levels before during Bitcoin's evolution. And so we've never seen sort of a high interest rate environment. And it's interesting to see what's happening with risk capital right now coming back into the market. There's been massive amounts of cash sitting in the sidelines and it's now coming in, and that's what's driving Bitcoin accumulation and so forth. And we've never had ETFs investing in the commodity, in this new digital commodity before. And not only just ETFs, but pretty sizable ones that won't have this sort of, you know, snap behavior on a halving to, you know, folks, you know, selling out of that, although we shouldn't expect it to. So it should sort of protect the downside to some extent. Now, if that's true, hash rate might continue to rise, and that could still create some challenges as you have a halving. And so it's going to be interesting to see what happens this year with this, you know, programmatic change in the platform. So everyone's sort of preparing, everyone's made the right moves, bolstering, you know, balance sheets, reassessing miner efficiency and making sure hash rates are really high. And then we're all going to experience together whether this is truly different this time or the same old thing.
Yeah, luckily we have a first time all-time high for Bitcoin before halving. So that's typically like, you know, 8 to 12 months afterwards we experience multiple
right.
high. So sort of like some nice breathing room. Okay, so we kind of covered the Bitcoin mining and the halving part. I want to finish off the conversation talking about what you're seeing after the halving with an important little bit there about like AI transition. So you said earlier in the conversation that energy is now the most important part. Do you think there's going to be some Bitcoin miners who experience max pain and they might have energy contracts but can't continue mining? Do you foresee like a lot more of these Bitcoin miners transitioning out of Bitcoin mining after the halving and going to AI? Are you expecting that to occur? And I'll let you answer that one, and I have one follow-up question after that.
Well, it's hard to speak for what the other miners would do. I mean, I would imagine that folks who are locked into very high power contracts that are fixed are going to find themselves challenged, you know, during the halving, depending on what happens with it, and that will make it very challenging and very. They just won't have a lot of room for flexibility. And there's really two options there: combine their businesses with larger ones, or exit the industry altogether. And transitions to new businesses, unless you're already planning that, it's sort of hard to do right on the fly. But speaking for Soluna, we have four primary ways, that we make money. I've talked about the prop mining, hosting for Bitcoin miners. We also do grid ancillary services now. So we have demand response programs that we participate in where the behavior of our facility is beneficial to the grid and allows us to earn money. And in the fourth area, which is high performance computing, AI is something that we're already planning. And the goal for us is to transition into that business before the end of the year. You'll probably see the beginnings of those transitions in a significant way, you know, in the middle of the year. The work that we're doing at Sophie, bringing in these startups, you know, I've experienced this before in my career where you have these big technology waves, and you see companies that show up that didn't exist 2 years ago. You know, most of the deals outside of like the Metas and the Microsofts and AWSs out there are with companies, these AI labs that you've never heard of before.
Yeah.
And they're buying hundreds, if not billions of dollars of equipment and need to deploy it, or they have hundreds, if not billions of dollars of potential investment, and they need to train, you know, really big models. And so the demand for this is going to, you know, outstrip any what any one company can provide. And that leaves a tremendous amount of opportunity for companies like Soluna that have the core resource that you need, which is green, sustainable energy. That's why, you know, the Talon deal is being that they're looking for anything that's big and the ability to scale. And so we're well positioned there. And we're already planning to do this because it's part of our transition. And I think that will position us well through the halving, and we'll exit the halving, you know, essentially looking very different as a company in terms of what we do, how we do it, and how we're positioned in the Bitcoin space and beyond.
One last question for you. What does it look like for some of these Bitcoin miners to transition into alternate streams of revenue, not just energy, which we've talked a lot about in the show last 2-3 years, but mostly like GPU-based work? How does a smaller business go about this? And by small, I mean like, you know, still megawatts here. So still like a lot of energy.
Right.
Not an Amazon. Like, how do you go from, you know, mining Bitcoin to stepping into that world?
Well, most of the guys who are really big had the opportunity to do this through the Ethereum transition. The one thing that they had the advantage was that they already were working with GPUs. They weren't the class of GPUs, perhaps, that would do AI, but they understood how to maintain them and support them. So that muscle was already there. And then they could use the profits from the mining of Ethereum to invest in, you know, GPU equipment that can then be marketed out to customers. I think, you know, Bitcoin miners will be doing some similar things. The ones who are prop mining might be well suited to take some of the profits from prop mining and invest it in GPU equipment and resources and expertise to begin to build out that capability. But that won't be sufficient. You know, the market has already evolved to a level where it's becoming enterprise class. So you not only have to be a specialized data center, but you have to have, you know, preparedness to support a very large deployment of a workload and provide all of the services, software, and expertise that you're going to need to deliver on the customer's expectations. So it'll be, as I said, you know, Will, it's going to be really hard to just transition, you know, while you're feeling pain into this business. You really have to plan it out, find the right equipment and software and services providers to help mitigate risk on the deployment. And you have to have a strategy to scale because, you know, I've seen 10 to 20, you know, GPU deployments suddenly become 200 to 1,000 GPU deployments because these models get bigger and bigger and the workloads and use cases evolve because these are all startups and they're sort of finding their way. So it's not going to be easy to make the transition. So unless it's already underway and well thought through, it's going to be challenging.
Love it. John, thanks for joining the podcast today. This is a really good conversation. Answers some questions I've had for quite a while. Where can people follow you or Soluna and keep up to date with what the company is doing?
Absolutely. We try to be everywhere. They can go to our website, solunacomputing.com. We just refreshed the design and it's got all sorts of cool new content now around AI. The initial storefront for that is there. You can find us on X, formerly known as Twitter. We're at Soluna Holdings. And if you're a LinkedIn person, I'm John Belazier there, and Soluna Holdings is also there. Go to the Soluna Holdings page and follow us. Lots of content there about our plans. And one other thing, we take questions all the time. Once a month, I answer questions from our shareholders and other folks in the industry. So be on the lookout for an AMA Q&A link. You can go in there and drop some questions for me or the team, and we love receiving them. That's where we are, Will.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah, you guys do a good job with your marketing. I kind of see yourself all over the place. And the sites look cool too, because you guys have like the pattern set up with the containers, and then you get the windmills in the background. So picturesque, which is different
from the
data centers, you know?
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Cool.
Thank you, man.
Don, we'll have you again soon. Thanks for your time.
All right. Thanks for having me.